Say it with me now. Gamban. 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 Use Gamban for all your blocking needs. Block that gambling. Block it. Block it now. And thank you to Epic Risk Management as well for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. We have Bobby Malatesta on from 321 No Kidding Podcast. Get ready for some lived experience and a good old time. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to All In, the Addicted Gamblers Podcast. My name is Brian and I haven't placed a bet since July of 2014. And with me today is the host of 321 No Kidding Podcast, as well as lived experience with gambling harm. I was just on her podcast and I had the best time ever. Bobby Malatesta is here to talk. Bobby, how are you? Thanks for doing this.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. I am here. I'm ready to go. Thank you. Is it okay I tell your audience how awesome you are and that you just let me totally vent and pour out to you before we started? Is that allowed?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Okay. I had the best time on your podcast.
I did too. I really enjoyed you coming on. And I love that in this world, it's not like two grocery stores, right? Like that's my background. And the two grocery stores down the street from each other, even though they're both grocery stores, they're competition. And I like that we don't think of that in this community, that just because you have a podcast and I have a podcast that we can't be united. So I love that. And I love that I have the opportunity to get to know you a little better.
I think of it more, I guess a little bit like when in my younger days, not now, but in my younger days, I used to watch ESPN and they would have sports writers on from across the United States. And the sports writers would just communicate. They weren't in competition with each other. They would come on and talk about what they had in common, which was sports. And we come on, we talk about gambling. And that's what I like, is you always have someone to talk to. If you don't have a guest, you just reach out to somebody who hosts a podcast and they'll come on and talk to you about gambling. I love this community. It's pretty cool. And I'm amazed at how it's grown. You know, the fact that one day I stumbled across you and your podcast, I'm like, oh my gosh, somebody else doing a gambling addiction podcast. This is incredible. I think is just real cool and real good for everybody who, you know, more and more people now when they need information on something, look up podcasts. And now when you look up gambling addiction podcast or gambling harm or problem gambling or whatever gambling, compulsive gambling, you can find, gosh, I don't know, 15, 20 podcasts about the subject now, which is great.
One of my favorite things about that is we all, I guess this is because it aligns with my views, is we all have our common themes, but we also, by all having our own unique personalities and strategies, we're giving the people who need the information the choices. Like it's kind of like they could connect with whatever, you know, just like in the rooms, take what you need and leave the rest. You can kind of do that virtually with our, all of our different styles and stuff.
Yeah. I say a lot of the time, like, listen, not everybody wants to listen to me, you know, they might be annoyed by me. I don't know. So go find somebody who speaks to you and let them give you the information that you need. There's many reasons why you might not want to listen to somebody. And so I'm glad that there's just different people, different personalities giving out the information that people need. And then beyond that, you know, we all have our other things that we talk about. And so it's nice to just have variety.
Yes.
So tell us about you. What is your before we get to the gambling, just about you in general.
Well, I am currently having to think about this. I'm currently in Connecticut. I gave up my grocery supermarket. I guess that's where my analogy came from. My grocery career of about 30 years, a couple years ago, to try this entrepreneurial stuff. I'm divorced and don't have dogs yet. They're coming. I'm currently staying with mom. But I have this whole future planned out. My big vision is to open a chain of recovery playgrounds. I think we talked a little about that last week. So that's just basically like what I eat and breathe and live, is trying to figure out how to come up with the solutions to my gazillion dollar mission. And just kind of learn and go with the flow every day. Kind of where I'm at.
When did your podcast start?
In the fall of 2019. Yeah, it was like November. I think it took me like, I bought an online class. I guess that's another big piece of me is I bought this online class to learn how to podcast. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Pat Flynn, but I started listening to his podcast and I bought his course that like shows you everything from what microphone to buy to, you know, launch with three episodes. And it got me into this whole online world of learning, which was kind of interesting. But yeah, so I started with the intention of doing one show a week, educating people. And there's a, my like, where I get to be a little bit of a fangirl, the podcaster, his name is Paul Churchill, and he does Recovery Elevator, which is a alcohol-free podcast.
Okay.
And he was kind of my inspiration because I would listen to his show and I was like, oh, he's talking about alcohol. I want to kind of do this and talk about gambling. So it was the combination of that. And I thought, oh, I'll do my day job and I could podcast on the side. It'd still have enough time to kind of work both missions. Cause I was only 2019 was 2 years into my recovery at that time when I started.
So you last bet in 2017?
Yes.
March
21st of 2017.
Oh gosh. We're coming upon it, huh?
We are. We're a week away from 5 years.
Wow. How do you feel after 5 years?
That's a good question. It's funny. Sometimes it feels so long ago and other times it doesn't, you know, so much has changed. The first time I quit gambling, cause I did it once before, I did it in 2013 to 2015 for 2 years. It was a very GA based quit. And I was out in Kansas City and I was collecting my little keychains and going to my GA meetings. And, this time I had gone to rehab and I got out and I kind of, picked up, I don't know, the guy I thought I was born to meet actually in rehab. And he has the same clean date as me. And the 5 years has been kind of, I don't know, clouded, enhanced, crazy. Like it's been a journey with, he helps me stay vulnerable and honest and all of that. But then he also makes me crazy. Cause we're in way different places of the world. And, that part of it makes it feel long and short all at the same time. It's like, where the hell did 5 years go? But then it's like, damn, this feels like a lifetime. I don't know. It's just been a really weird adventure. Cause it's not just my adventure. Sometimes it feels like, how we're engaging at what particular time kind of changes the landscape of time. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you start gambling? How did that all begin?
Oh,
my dog.
I think you said this too, and it's interesting. The family games, right? The nickel dime poker. I've always liked games. I like math. I just like maths and being challenged and stuff and puzzles, those kinds of things. So it was part of our family, the poker. You would go to games or picnics and they would be, have you ever heard of holy board where you throw these washers? It's kind of like cornhole. You throw washers on these boards, these metal, anyway, it's kind of like cornhole.
Okay.
And we always did it tournament style. So somebody would go around and grab $5 and, you know, draw teams and everything was for money, not for money in the sense of it's a big deal. It's more for bragging rights or adrenaline or whatever. It was just part of it. Screw Your Neighbor, which is a card game.
I played that.
Yeah. It's so funny. I've kind of screwed up everybody's thing, right? Like I'm not invited to the hold'em parties anymore, but they have to be selective about what games we play now. Cause they forget something. Screw Your Neighbor, they think of as very innocent. So that was kind of how I was immersed in. And then I remember being in my teenage years, the first store I worked at, I was buying lottery tickets, you know, Powerball and all that crap every week. And then I got to where I could have the customer service girls. So scratch offs come in books of like 250 or 500. And because I was an employee, I could get them to give me the whole book. I would scratch it and then either pay them or they would pay me depending on the result. instead of playing the whole game, they would just give me the book. They knew I was good for it. I don't remember ever really coming out ahead on that one, quite honestly. I don't know if it was the high of scratching or whatever. We go to High Lie before, like, I think all of this is before I was 21. My uncle had painted Foxwoods, which is a big casino here in Connecticut. And I knew how to sneak onto the casino floor through a bathroom because he had told me. But I couldn't play big because I couldn't win big because it was only 19. And that was an hour and a half from where I live. So I was taking the risk of going down and getting thrown out if they ever carded me or figured me out. So then it evolved into casino gambling quite a bit. I love bingo. And that's another thing, bingo from the time I was a little, you know, the grandmothers, you go to church and you play bingo. And then I grew up in Foxwoods had bingo and I won a car on a $10 bingo day. So that was my big win to speak of that began the chase. And that was in 2001. So 20 something years ago, that was my big, big win. Cause it was a brand new car. My ex-husband ruined the whole experience for me because we had been truck drivers. We met when I was a truck driver and we would drive across the country and it 2001-ish, right? So that's September 11th, all that stuff. Eventually we had worked our way to having our own truck and I was wife number three and he was husband number one and he had four kids. I actually have a point to tell you this, but we were supposed to be paying child support and all of this, right? With the kids. So we'd be on the road and we'd take turns driving until we didn't, till he'd wake up and find me in the casino when I should have been driving. And then he would take over because I'd be too tired after gambling all night or my whole shift. And I would sit there and I would yell at him about driving so fast when the fuel was so expensive. But I just, you know, lost $2,000-$3,000, whatever it was, but I was bitching about this fuel because he was driving fast to make up for me losing all that money, or bitching about the child support and like all these things that were totally irrelevant when I was just gambling away all the money anyway.
It's funny how you think about your gambling money. Like, just like this money's for gambling and you're spending it on food and gas. What's wrong with you?
Yes. Oh yeah. I always use the analogy, like Dunkin' Donuts raise their coffee a dime and I have a heart attack, but to throw $100 bills in the slot machine, it's like, okay, whatever. Cause it's not money when you're there. It's not anything to do with money.
I got sick of, cause I, you know, you go to an ATM that's outside of the casino and you get a bunch of 20s and I would hate having to feed in all the 20s.
Yes.
So I started when I would get there, I would just stick them all into one machine and then get the ticket out. But I never made it as far as the ticket because I would end up just gambling through all the money. But it would annoy me so much that I'd do it all right at the beginning, just like get it out of the way so I can be comfortable and not have to reach into my pocket and pull out another one and stick it in. And oh, that was so annoying. I loved it when the machines inside the casino, the ATMs would give you hundreds, even though that's crazy. because it's just less work to do to get to the gambling.
Does that mean you weren't around way back when before tickets? Were you?
No, I started before tickets and getting all that filthy change.
Well, filthy. You're trying to walk to the window
with your bucket and they would dump it in their bin. Yeah. And you're like, look at all this money. And then they count it out and you're like, it's not very much.
Yeah.
Although it did make, we'll say it did make winning anything on a machine better when all you hear is ding, 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 look of the tinging of the coins on the bottom.
So true. So true.
But yeah, it's certainly become a lot scarier now that there's just tickets that spit out. And I think now you can even probably load a card and just go machine to machine.
Oh, that's scary. Well, the tickets got scary too. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the first time of getting tickets and thinking, oh, well, this is great because I'll just gamble my money and I'll save all the tickets. And then at the end, I'll cash in the tickets and that'll be. Of course, then the money went through and I'm like, well, let me just pull up this ticket. Well, this ticket's got more on it than I want to gamble. Well, I'll just put it in and then I'll only gamble
when it gets to this point, yeah. I'll press the button. Oh, one more bonus round, please. One more bonus round.
I conned myself so many times.
Yes.
And by the third or fourth time out of the thousands of times I should have realized, like, Brian, just gamble it all. You know you're going to. Don't lie to yourself. Yeah. So what happened the first time that made you want to quit?
So my goal was to be director of floral by the time I was 40. I had been saying that all through my 30s. I learned how to golf. I went back to college. I mean, it was a, I'm going to do this. So I ended up doing it at 39, and I was moving out to Kansas City. And even when I was apartment shopping, I was staying at Harrah's. And I was about a month into it. And at this point, my husband and I had gotten separated, but we worked on getting the divorce finalized right before I left, just, you know, to clean that up. So I'm out there all by myself, and I have my dream job. I'm director, and I'm in a beautiful place. And about a month in, I was at Harrah's on a Saturday night. I was going, of course, all the time, but on this particular Saturday night, I lost everything, and I had maxed out the cards. There was no chance of getting any more money. The payment was due, like some exorbitant payment, my rent money, it was all gone. So I got home, and in the middle of the night, and I don't know if you ever experienced this, but I would lay down and my eyelids would become slot machines. Like the windows, like the back, like instead of sleeping, I would just see the reels go, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So it was like one of those nights, but it was also a shit. I got to figure out what to do. Here I am in the middle of the country all by myself, and I don't want to lose this job that I've put so much effort into. So I was like, all right, I'm going to have to go to GA. I'm going to have to get a second job. So that Sunday, I put in applications at all these places and found a GA meeting for that Monday night. And basically I went back out of fear, I guess, is the short version. It was fear that I was going to lose my job, lose my apartment, lose all the things. So that was pretty motivating.
Yeah.
And it was in August. It was August. Yeah. And still, you know, like when I'm going to meetings and stuff, it was great. But the first Christmas came. So for Thanksgiving, we had family in Denver, and we went, but the first Christmas came, and it was like, ooh, the only thing open is casinos. And I had nowhere to go, really, you know, because I was just there and I couldn't afford to go back east. So I ended up Christmas Eve deciding around 2 o'clock, I jumped in the car and I drove all the way to Denver from Kansas City, which was like a 10 or 11 hour ride, just to not be alone, because I was too scared to gamble at Christmas. So it's like one of those really extreme things I did to protect myself.
That's a commitment.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't go back. Like, I knew I couldn't go back.
Yeah.
And then after a couple of years in the program, I had so like I said, it was August. So August 2015. So it must have been May of 2015. My girlfriend came out, and I took her to the casino for a lobster buffet. It was like you got 4 lobster tails for free or cheap or whatever. And I didn't gamble, and we had to walk through the casino floor to get to the food. And the way I've been taught, and I don't know if this is true or not, it's like, you know, it's like the doctor level stuff, but essentially they say you relapse before you relapse. So in the world that I come from, so in hindsight, it's like, did I relapse that day? Like, was I going to start setting the stage for it? So in October, and I didn't shut off the emails in the mail. So every week or 2 weeks or whatever, I was getting the free plays. And they, interestingly enough, they went from like $25 all the way up to $500 a week.
Holy cow. Like,
yeah, it was no joke. So it's getting up to this really crazy amount of money. And I went to a Renaissance festival, and I loved going to this Renaissance festival. And I think a couple things happened. I can't tell you 100% for sure. There was the going in May. There was, I think I messed with my medication by myself because I was on a non-smoking medication, which doctors also use for like playing with your brain, depression, that kind of stuff. So I feel like I was trying to get off of that medicine. And I think there was conflict with the guy I was seeing. So there was like a perfect storm brewing. I go to this Renaissance festival and I was drinking, and in the back of my head, I have this free play sitting at home from my in my mailbox. So my guard was down just enough, I guess. And all of this stuff culminated that I was like, and I was mind you, excuse me, like a half an hour to my apartment and then another half an hour to the casino. So it's a very deliberate relapse. So I drive home, I get the coupons, which come to find out I didn't need. They would have had it just by my card. And I drove to the casino. Now on the way, I called four people, three from GA, and I got a hold of no one. And then my girlfriend that was there in May. And if she had asked me what I was doing, if I was going to gamble, I would have told her. But at this point, I had 2 years in, nobody really asked. My ex-husband is the only one who really still asks when we communicate. I'll be like, "You still doing good?" Which says a lot about how cool he is. But nobody asked. So I talked to her casually all the way until I got there. And then I just went in. And that was in October. And then Thanksgiving was coming. And at this point, Brian, I had the most money in the bank I've ever had. I had $3,500 in a savings account. Like, I didn't even know what a friggin' savings account was. Right. First time in my whole life. So Thanksgiving's coming and different people. Now I know more people. And they're like, this one's like, "Do you want to come to my house?" And I was like, "Well, so-and-so asked me." And so-and-so did ask me, but I didn't say I still didn't like lying. I've never liked lying, which is part of why I like being by myself, because then I'm not accountable to anybody. Yeah. So I would tell this one and this one, "Oh, this one asked me. But in the back of my mind, it was already happening. I was already at the casino Thanksgiving in my mind, even though I didn't even really know that for sure at the time. But there's where I went. And that's where my $3,500 went that Thanksgiving. Gambled it all away. And by the beginning of the year, it was 2016. I can't tell you much about 2016. Like, if I wasn't gambling, I was drinking. I remember seeing my niece when I was back on a Connecticut visit. She was showing me pictures of her in 2016. I didn't even recognize her. So I was like that disconnected. I had no idea what was going on back here. I wasn't really communicating with anybody. It was just like one big blur. And it was not good. My employees thought that I was either getting like abused at home, or like they thought something bad was going on. I didn't find that out until after, but I was changing, you know, and people around me knew it. I was skipping out of work and sneaking to the casino. But the problem was, I knew all the little old men from the food clubs were also at the casinos, you know, and they might tell my bosses or whatever. It was really bad. It was really bad. And I knew, like, and it's funny too. I don't know if you ever went through a relapse, but did you stay connected to, like, did you have GA community or family?
Yeah.
That you were like connected to, even though you were still gambling, that you would still like communicate with?
No, I ditched out on them. I mean, I went back to them eventually, but at the time I ditched out. No, I didn't.
Well, I would still go, even though I was gambling, I would still go for important anniversary parties or something else. Oh, we had a conference every year. It was like a one-day little event, and I would go for that. And I remember going, and it was, they do the ceremony where they count down the clean, or they count up the clean dimes. Like if you have a day, and then if you have a week, and you know, like all the way to the years, and you form a circle and you're holding hands kind of thing. I don't know if, I feel like it's an AA thing, but they did it at GA too. And instead of being at the 3 years, cause there was a bunch of us that had anniversaries around the same time, I was at one day, and that felt really icky. So I was connected enough that my GA husband's like, "You're going to go to the rehab that I went to?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't have the money. Oh, I can't take the time off," like every excuse. And then I went in for a benefits meeting. And because I was director, I was executive level insurance, which I didn't even really know. And they're like, "Oh, you have 8 weeks paid short-term disability." And I was like, "Well, there goes my last excuse." So I signed up and went to rehab. And
that's pretty fortuitous that you go in and they're like, "Hey, you have short-term, you can take off 8 weeks." And wonder why anybody would want to do that. It almost, it's like they were just teasing and tempting you to go.
Well, they didn't know how bad it was. Like this was just a sign up for your insurance, and it just happened to be conversationally. And it just happened. So that must have been like November, December, whenever enrollment is. So I had I could talk for hours, Brian, sorry. So I had this free cruise that I had to use in my mind before I went to rehab. Like I had to use it. I wasn't going to let this $800 cruise that probably cost me $80,000 stand in the way. So I had scheduled I wanted to go on the cruise after Valentine's Day because there was a gap because I'm in Floral, right? So I had to get through Valentine's Day, but then not screw up Easter and all the things I needed to do. And I had invited my cousin, who was also, I still think she's kind of a gambleholic, but it's not for me to say. She couldn't come. And my mother invited herself. And my mother was sick my whole honeymoon on a cruise. Never would have occurred to me that she'd want to go. Well, she invited herself and Paul. So I got to go on the cruise, give up my bed. They got my bed. I got to sleep on this awkward little couch. And I partied like a rock star and gambled like a rock star the whole cruise. And then it was really funny. It was St. Patrick's Day. It was that Friday night. So we must have landed on the 18th. And the way things had gone down, we landed in Orlando. I flew back to Kansas City on that Saturday. Sunday, I flew here to New York for a job interview, flew back to Kansas City. And Monday, I left to drive to rehab. So, and then while I was in rehab, negotiated the job to come back out to the East Coast to get away. Because in Kansas City, it's like old school. There's all these, you know, there's the Missouri River. And there must have been 12 casinos or so built on the Missouri River because it was all the old school. You had to be on the riverboat with the boat moving in order to gamble back then. So I thought the change of scenery to New York would be good. And when I moved back to New York, believe it or not, I lived in front of a casino. Like that was my walking route, was we were walking around the casino every single day of this quittingness, this 5 years. So for about 3 years of it, I was walking around this casino.
But you were strong enough not to use it.
Well, I feel like it's not one of those casinos. It's the casino I had my last bet at, but it wasn't. I always describe my gambling as my first relationship, like my boyfriend of 30 years. And I didn't have a relationship with this casino because it was new. There was another one that was about 45 minutes north that my ex was working third shift and I would sneak out. You know, I'd do the whole good night, honey call, hang up. And then I'd have like my clothes on under the covers and I'd be up at the casino an hour later and just hope that he didn't VTO and come home and catch me. But that casino, if I lived in front of that one, it would have been dangerous. I don't know that I would have had the fortitude. Did you stay up too late last night or am I boring?
No, I apologize. I got up at whatever time, 3 with my daughter. And so I am yawning for that reason. And I didn't take my meds this morning yet. I forgot. So that's the other reason I'm like,
I almost
has nothing to do with you.
I feel like I yawn a lot when I record, especially by myself. And I don't know if it's the room or I don't know what it is, but.
But I do feel bad doing it, especially. So I'm like covering my mouth. Like you can't tell I'm yawning. It's not often I get somebody on here who has been to the 30-day program inpatient for gambling. Can you talk about that experience?
Of course. Well,
I won't yawn while you do.
Well, we'll see. So I remember driving up and I was on the phone with a friend and I hadn't packed sneakers. Like this is going to sound weird, but I hadn't packed sneakers. So he cons me into going to a store to buy sneakers. He's like, well, you're going to need, cause I've always been active, like Zumba walking, those kinds of things. He's like, you're going nuts without them. So I stop and I buy sneakers, which sounds weird. And I had stopped for like my last meal. So I show up. So again, I have this job outstanding. I have my meal and my sneakers and I'm like ready to go. And I just think I'm going to go in and run this show. Okay. Well, here's my leftovers. You know, I have no idea what patient intake and all this crap looks like. So they want to take away my food because it's outside food. I have to go in like this holding area. And it's also a drug and alcohol center, the one that I went to in Minnesota, which is pretty interesting because they're like 2 miles up the road from a casino that's owned by the same people who own the rehab, which had offered its own flavor. But anyway, so they take me in and, you know, do the paperwork. And the way it works is, I don't know all of it until afterwards, but you're kind of on the schedule because I couldn't wrap my head. I must have called them 30 times before I went in because I was very regimented. Like I expected what I expected and expected to have control, but I really didn't. So our days, there was a schedule and it would start with, you know, you had to show your face between a certain time getting up in the morning. And then you could take your shower stuff and you go back in and you had time to shower. And then we'd walk as a group. Everything was as a group. we were co-ed in the gambling unit, and we'd have to walk to breakfast together. If any of the drug or alcohol people were in the hallway or whatever, like, we'd stay like almost locked in the room that we ate in. We couldn't be in the hallway at the same time of them. Really weird stuff, because I'm like, well, what difference does it make? Like, we're co-ed, but it was more about them. The boys couldn't be around the girls and the girls couldn't be around the boys. And that was interesting. The food was pretty bad. I mean, it was like, how many different ways can you just disguise hamburger? Although I liked the pork chops. One day I did like the pork chops. But the food was like all carbs and sugar and stuff to help the people with substance abuse. They needed that food and all of that stuff. So we would do that. We'd go back, and then we had regular group meetings that were led by counselors, that we'd do a reading out of the One Day at a Time book and then have conversation. We'd have meetings where they gave us like homework worksheets, and then we'd have to read our homework out loud. They had side exercises, which was pretty interesting too. The one that really stuck with me is I had to do values. So they give you this envelope that has 100 different words that are values, and it could be anything from money, recreation, family, just on and on. And the exercise was you take this 100 all the way down to like, what are your top X amount of values? And they didn't like the way I did it the first time, so they made me do it again a few weeks later. And it was interesting how much it had changed. So evidently whatever they were doing was working. We had GA meetings, and that was the only time that the counselors weren't in the room. And with that, what I thought was kind of, I like what they did, and no other GA meetings that I've ever been to did this. We would just pick a number, and the numbers correlated. See, it's all gamifying, I guess. The numbers coordinated with a word. So like, if you picked number 13 and 13 was hope, then that was the conversation for that night. I will tell you that some of my frustrations, or some things that were interesting and frustrating, was there was people in there that were using it just as a warm place to sleep, because it was Minnesota. So they qualified, and here they were. And there was like one lady, she would freaking snore during group. Another one, she barely came out of her room, but there was these rules, and I would find myself getting really pissed off. Like, if I have to follow the rules, why don't they have to follow the rules?
Yeah.
Which had nothing to do with me, but it really pissed me off. And I remember the counselors being like, Bobby, like, stay in your lane. And you, how did they said it basically like, this was preparing me for the real world, right? Like, I was going to run into difficult people in difficult situations in the real world. So that was kind of interesting. We had a 77-year-old man in treatment with us. Like, if you can wrap your head around that. And even here in New York, we have one that just turned 80 something, which is really interesting. And the way it works is you show up and you're just on your day one, but the program rolls. So every 4 weeks it changes. So like, there was a guy who, he reminds me of Deepak Chopra, actually, but he would come in and he would teach us something. There was a chaplain, we'd do grief counseling. Like, there was different things you could pick. And there was only very limited free time where you could go outside and walk around the thing. There was like a little lake, but everything, even playing games or TV time, everything was regimented. And the other thing that's really interesting that came out of it is my values on recovery. They went through your suitcases when you got there. You couldn't wear clothes that had any sports teams or logos on it. The TV wouldn't let you watch anything from Law and Order to sports. And then, like, what are those shows where they go like to the pawn shops, or they hoard, yeah, or all of those, because they had a gambling element to it. Like, those treasure hunting shows had a gambling element to it. So what that did for me was it makes me really hardcore. Like, when I'd go come out and I came to New York and we'd go to group and they'd be talking about the Yankees game. And I'm like, guys, like, this is the gambling center. Like, you can't be talking about sports here. Like, it was just what became program. Uh-huh. So I don't know if it's like judgy or it's just this foundational rules that I have around what recovery looks like and what's acceptable, because there's, to my understanding, there's only 6 inpatient true gambling facilities across the country, like dedicated to gambling, or that have a dedicated part. But here in New York, they have five or six different treatment centers that would take gamblers. It was still kind of new, but one of the guys from our group went. They let him leave after 2 weeks. Those guys were like all substance abuse. He was the only gambler. So maybe because it was young, but it was still kind of, you know, they're watching the sports, they're doing all this stuff. And then they let him leave. And it's like, well, yeah, in my mind, the imperfect Bobby is still like, hey, it's black and white. Like, you don't follow the rules, you gamble. Like, it's just that you don't do what you're supposed to do. This is what happens, which is part of why I guess that I'm so wound up about the stuff we talked about before I got on the air, because I'm doing what the freak I'm supposed to do. Like, when is it all right? And yeah, anyway, I'm in the background. I owe another podcaster whose show I'm going to be on in April. We were talking about it. I'm writing a book. It's called Rock Bottom Recovery, or Recovery Rock Bottom. And the essence of it is, even though you do all the right things in recovery, or you think you're doing the right things, it's still not perfect and it's still not easy and shit just happens. And it's true. Like, it's true. And I struggle with it because of this premise in my mind. Like, I'm a very black and white person, like screw the gray. This is why I could never be a therapist or one of those gushy people, because there's no gray in my world. Like, it is or it isn't. And I know it's what I need to do well at my recovery and like to be successful with it. Like, I can't color outside the lines as far as definitions or rules or any of that. Like, there can't be gray, because that's just destructive for how I operate. So I really went long on that, but treatment was interesting. I think
good experience overall.
Well, I'm still in recovery, so I'm going to go with yes. However, I think I described it to you as the cross between summer camp and jail. And that's the closest I ever want to get to jail. And the other thing, like, if you're anybody in your audience is ever considering it, and one of my sponsees just went to my same place. I had referred him there a couple months ago. And I was like, listen, when you go in, your only job is to take care of yourself. Like, that's your only job. And you have this 30 days to do it. Like, how, it's almost a gift, right? Like, could you imagine if every adult got to go away for 30 days and just work through their shit? Like, what would the world look like if that actually happened?
I did it for 2 weeks and it was magical.
Yeah, there's something to it, but that's not really how the world works, I guess.
No, it's a shame, because that would be great if everybody could just take that time and go work on themselves. Because that was what was nice about it, is like, you don't have to worry about this and that and that. That's all being taken care of, luckily. You know, I was in a good position where it was all being taken care of. You just get better. Work on you. Talk. Use the therapy wisely. Use this time. It's a gift.
Well, and how many people waste it? Unfortunately, right? Like, they don't get that. There's nobody telling them before they go in that this is what it's for. Instead, it usually is, I mean, I'm speaking really broad strokes here, but usually people are getting forced, or it's the law or the family or the whatever. Yeah. And it just feels like punishment. It doesn't feel like an opportunity. So it's all how you frame it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a good point. What would you say to that person still struggling who doesn't necessarily want to stop? You remember that feeling of, I want to stop, but I don't want to stop. I want to stop, but I don't want to give up gambling forever. What would you say to that individual?
Chances are, and I had this individual in my life, he's actually the one who went to one of those New York places. And he's still, he probably has like 4 or 5 months now, but he's had 18 months and, you know, it's a vicious cycle. So that's who I picture in my head when you ask this question, because I said to him before he went to treatment, I was like, do you want to quit? He's like, well, no, not really. I just don't want the consequences of it. Right. Well, that makes sense to me. Yeah. I don't want the consequences of it either.
Yeah. I want all the good, but not the bad, please.
So I don't know if people who are in that place can necessarily hear people like us, if we do give them advice. But what I would say is that, and Oscar would say this, he was one of our coaches, you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams when you quit gambling. So like, if I was to sit here and tell you all the things I've done in the last 5 years, from going to Dubai, to living with strangers in England, to traveling the country. I've now been to all 48 states. We got past rehab, so you're allowed to do that.
I know. I yawned.
The people I've met, the things that I'm learning about, like I said, even this online learning stuff. I mean, I'm going to Florida in a couple of weeks and I'll be in the same room as people like Damon John. And last year there was Kevin O'Leary, and he's one of my favorites.
Shark Tank people, right?
Well, and Pitbull, and who's that baseball player? A-Rod. Like, all these people were in the same room as me. They were, of course, were on stage and I was watching, but I never would have been in there. I never would have went right to something like that if I was still gambling. I'd be locked up in these rooms. And like, just driving around the country, like, it's my favorite thing to do, is being in my car and driving around the country. And the sunrises and the sunsets and the mountains and the green and the, you see everything with this, I see everything with this whole new light. I never noticed all that stuff before. I would be just worried about the cha-ching. Like, I can think of the ride going to Connecticut. Like, that's one of my boyfriends. Is Foxwoods is definitely one of my boyfriends in Mohegan. And it was all about, when do I see those brown signs telling us that we're close? Or, you know, that exits, like, okay, we're on route 2 now, you know, so you feel like you're just closer, as opposed to looking around and seeing what's actually going on in the rest of the world. So you have all this opportunity, just the time alone that you gain. Like, I wonder, how the hell did I have time to gamble? And, you know, never mind the experiences, the conversations, all of that stuff. So yeah, if somebody is out there that still wants to gamble, that doesn't understand what they're, you don't know what you're losing because you've never had it, probably, right? Like, if you could see, if you can live in gratitude and you could see all the beauty and all those things, chances are you're not trying to escape those things. And that's what gambling is, right? That's what addiction is, escaping from whatever it is we don't want to deal with. At least that's my belief. And we have to visit what we don't want to deal with to heal in order to, like, I don't know, like, open up to all of that stuff. I call it a bucket on my show. Like, your bucket has all your shit in it, right? And you have to scoop out all the stuff. That's what recovery is, scooping out all that stuff. And then the hard stuff is this bottom, like, 2 or 3 inches, I call it. And that's the really ugly. That's the deep. That's the whatever. And if you don't ever get there, chances are you're going to just relapse and relapse and relapse. Again, in my opinion, in my little metaphorical bucket. However, you get through those 3 inches and you start filling the bucket with positivity, with, you know, your meditations, your whatever those tools are, all that good stuff. So that when, so the kid who went to rehab, he said to me, I was working a grocery store job right at the end of the year. And he's like, geez, he's like, you'll just do whatever to not gamble. Like, you're not just talking the talk, like, you're walking, you're like, you're working like this job. Not that there's anything wrong with being a deli clerk, but when you go from executive to being a deli clerk, it's a little humbling. And he's like, so you're doing it. And the reason I bring this up is because I filled my bucket with enough of the tools that even with all the shit that happened in the last 2 years, I didn't go back because I had enough, like, extra stored at the bottom of my bucket. I don't think my bucket's back full completely yet, because it doesn't feel that way yet. But that's what keeps me away from relapse, was having enough stuff stored up. And when other people deplete you of it, or situations that you feel like you can't control, you have to almost be prepared for them, even though it's still going to be hard. Like, you got to be prepared. Or, like, I should really be back out gambling. I really should. And that's kind of how Pete said it to me. He's like, wow, you've had every excuse to go back out. He's like, and you don't. And we talked about our obligation to our audiences. I can't be a hypocrite. It's one of those black and white rules. I can't sit here and tell you that there's a better life of not gambling, and that you can face the shit without escaping and then go out and gamble. Like, I just can't do that. It's against my rules. So rules are sometimes good.
Would you say that the road is your happy place?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Love it out there. I can listen to books. podcasts, my trainings. I can shut everything off and just get lost in my mind. I could see the beauty of it all. The one thing I haven't done, which I really need to, is get a CB again. I'm missing having a CB like when I was a trucker. I was like, why didn't I get one of these a couple of years ago? Just to know what's going on. But then that would open another whole door of distraction. And I really like my alone time in the car, just zoning out. I even sleep in the car quite a bit. And my last trip to Miami, I had friends that are like, no, if you're here, you're staying here. And I'm like, so I go and I stay at their house and it was lovely. I mean, they had a really cute dog that slept with me, so that made me really happy. But there's something about my own space, my own independence, like to not be having to go to sleep on somebody else's schedule or get up on somebody else's schedule or other people's noise. Like I'm just turning into like an old little hermit lady, I guess. So being in my car, I get to be my little hermit self. Like I can be cool around people, but it has to be on my terms and when I'm wannabe, which is probably not good either, but.
Well, Bobby, it has been a true delight to speak with you and do this the other way. It was so much fun doing it vice versa a couple of days ago, and here we are doing it this way. So thank you so much.
Well, I hope that it was just as fun today. It was fun for me, and I hope that your audience got some value out of my crazy story.
Yeah, and check out her podcast, 321 No Kidding. Your website, is it 321 No Kidding or is it No Kidding 321, the website?
So 321. Is next Monday, right? 321. And then No Kidding. So it's always 321 No Kidding to answer your question.
Okay.
But No Kidding, because no children are going to be allowed in my recovery playground. No Kidding.
There you go. I always wondered. See, I never asked. I wondered. And there it is.
So there's that. And then also the other part that's kind of a fun play on words is people don't understand that gambling's an addiction. They're like, oh, gambling's an addiction? No Kidding.
Yeah.
Like, oh, really? So yeah, my friend.
Oh, and real quick, you mentioned it, but you should mention it again in a little longer before we go, your idea. Cause I think it's a really neat idea. The idea of having some place to go in recovery and hang out socially that isn't built for booze or gambling.
Right. So the 321 mission or building the recovery playgrounds is a place where no alcohol, no gambling, to your point, but also to teach adults how to play again and to do the self-care, to do the proactive stuff. So whether you're in recovery or you're just someone who's just dealing with shit and you need to blow off steam instead of doing it with alcohol or gambling. So the premise is to have all the activities that you would find, like a pool table for someone who wants to be on a billiard league or a dart league, volleyball, roller skating. I want to have sober events, and I want there to be a piece where you can communicate with like-minded people just in a healthy way instead of, you know, under the bar. So
this sounds really cool. And it sounds like a great idea. Is that that's what you're working on now? That's what you're trying to do?
Yeah. That's,
it's really exciting.
It is exciting. And I'm just waiting for what am I not doing right to get itself situated? I mean, I'm definitely marketing it before it's born, so I know that part is right. It's just figuring out what the secret sauce is to get it going. Cause it's like in one of those places that's cut between, cause it's going to be a for-profit thing. Like the structure that I want to have is the people who can afford tickets. I want to buy tickets, and they're going to be a little inflated, but they'll also, the tickets that they buy, it'll be built in to cover the person who can't afford to buy a ticket so that they're not on the street, right? Like they're inside. So that's like part of the model built in. And then I'm not an architect, but my building in my head is all fancy and has all this really cool stuff. Like you come in through a slide and you go in a ball pit, and you know, there's an ice cream sundae bar in the middle of the roller skating ring. And it's just in my mind in this really fun way. And I know once it's built, it's going to be epic and everybody's going to want one in one of their cities. It's just figuring out that to get from here to there.
As soon as you said you come in on a slide and go into a ball pit, I pictured it right away. So,
right. Like we don't get, you have a 3-year-old, you said, right? So if you went in a regular museum or McDonald's playground or whatever, you're not doing that. the kid is, and you're getting joy from the kid doing it, right? As a general parent rule, right?
Yeah, I guess I'm getting joy. I'd rather do it though. That seems like fun.
But you would you?
Oh, yeah, I'd do it in a second. Yeah, if there was an adult place to go have fun without kids, because that's the thing, is if I go to like the trampoline place, yeah, it's fun, but there's kids everywhere.
Right. You're afraid you're going to hurt them, or it's about their, like, that's the whole
They're point. Annoying. I mean,
well, yeah. I didn't know parents actually said stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. No, I love my own child, but other people, you know, other people's kids,
Even a swimming pool. Like, why do children think they need to scream whenever they're at a swimming pool? Like, it literally comes with it, these shrieks.
And that part I can answer because I've learned that my daughter just likes to scream to hear her own self.
Well, that's actually where the idea came from. I was at a swimming pool in Orlando in 2018, and there was a water slide, and I was standing in line behind kids. And I'm like, I don't want to stand behind kids in a line at a water slide. I want to have my own damn water slide. And that's literally how it was born.
And I agree with you. I want my own water slide too. I don't want to go to the water park with children. And it's that weird. I don't know. Did you feel like as an adult, the kids are judging me for wanting to have fun as well? Cause I felt that way sometimes at the water park. Like, why is this old man here? I'm like, I want to go down the water slide too.
Well, I feel like it's an expectation in society that as adults, we sacrifice the fun and stuff for the kids.
Yeah.
Like that. Think about adult fun anywhere you go. This is why that's the secret in the recipe, right?
Yeah.
You could go to a casino or you can go to the bar, but where else are there no kids? That's about it. So that's where the void is. And that's where the magic happens. And let's be goofy and silly and, you know, be allowed to be free spirited the way a kid, I mean, so much of the training, I don't know if you've experienced this, but whether it's the spiritual or just the training, when they talk about looking at things, like I call it kindergarten eyes from my work, but with this innocence, like kids have, like kids don't care if they're rolling around the beach naked, plopping through the water, you know, like they just don't care. But we get all these ideals that we judge each other and we don't think it's proper or whatever. All those voices are other people's shit. It's not our stuff. So when do we get to go play and be ourselves and just have fun and express ourselves?
Oh, I love that message. So you're right. You're right. I've been self-conscious many times. And it's because I'm worried about being judged by other adults.
Yeah. And I'm almost 50, right? Like I have 2 more years till 50 and it's still something that happens in my mind. Like, when do we outgrow that? When does it change? It's hard work to make it change. There's not many people who can genuinely say they don't care about that stuff. And if that's part of the pressure, right? In a casino, nobody's judging because they're all here doing the same thing. Or in a bar, they're all doing the same thing. So that's, again, another place of relief for people in addiction. Yeah, see, I knew talking about you and all this stuff would make me feel better. So thank you for that.
Oh, well, I'm glad we got to do it. We'll have to do it again sometime. This was a lot of fun in both ways. And so check out Bobby's podcast. 3, 2, 1, no kidding. Now I say it differently now that there's no, yeah, no kidding. And she's got how many episodes to offer now?
Like 575.
She put some work in. I thought I was doing good. I just put out my 300th episode and I was like, look at me and my 300. And all of a sudden 500. And actually I knew you had 500 last year when I saw you on LinkedIn. And I was like, holy cow, she must have been doing this a decade. But no, she just did the hell out of it for a couple of years, two, three years now.
Well, the 1 year solid, you figure 1 year of at least one a day is 365, right?
One a day is some work and dedication.
A good part of that was two a day. But I mean, it was COVID. Parts of me actually wish it would go back to lockdown so that I could do what I want to do instead of what the world says we should do. Like I got so much more done during that lockdown. Like anyway, should be rooting for that. A lot of bad mental health stuff came out of it, but
I'm finally starting to forget about it and move forward.
Okay. Then I'll go forward too, but
you got to come forward with us.
All right. I will, Brian. Thank you.
All right, Bobby. Well, it was great to talk to you. Thank you for doing this. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Breakfast Podcast is owned by Lee Street Media, LLC. Music provided by T. Vance. Remember, this is a podcast. The views expressed on the podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests. If you need help for a gambling addiction, please seek professional help.